What up, fantasy people? Thanks for tuning in to part two of our Strength of Schedule episode, where we're joined by Jacob Sanderson from Roto Underworld. We're about to dive into some of these team schedules and see who's got it good. So hunker down, hope you enjoy. Let's get it. Before we keep it rolling here, Ty, I do want to give one more shout out to our sponsor, Monkey Knife Fight. They are the official DFS platform of True North Fantasy Football. And while it is not football season right now, they are still humming over at Monkey Knife Fight. You can get in on, props for hockey, Oilers baseball, playoffs. Basketball. Yeah, the Oilers playoffs, which Ty is stoked about. You can get into props for the not Flames playoffs. I don't know if you can go in on Flames golf scores, but if you could,
Johnny Gaudreau's end. Because we're doing some cruel and unusual punishment, making them play the Canucks.
I know.
But yeah, Monkey Knife Fight's got it all. You can get in on the UFC action that's happening every weekend as well. Tons of really good stuff going on there. Our promo code TNFF gets you an instant match of up to 50 bones on your first deposit. So you drop 50, you get 50, you have a hundy over at Monkey Knife Fight. So thanks to Nick and the team over there. We've been loving that partnership, and they've been a great group to team up with, and it's been a lot of fun. So promo code's TNFF at monkeyknifefight.com. So Ty, we're going to get in some teams here, and I know that you're fired up for that. I'm really fired up to get into some of these team schedules because there is a lot of really good wrinkles in there. But I kind of want to hop in here and summarize a little bit about all of these Flames that we've been spitting, guys. So we've been talking about strength of schedule, bye weeks, a 17 game schedule, late season, early season, all that jazz cabbage. I want to say, like, overall, Jacob, just how heavily do you factor strength of schedule into your drafts and even in season roster decisions? Not necessarily like all the different points that you factor in about it, but like, is it really something that weighs a bit, like quite a bit, or is it just kind of a tiny little piece of that puzzle?
Yeah, it's not a huge thing. Like, it matters more to me in that best ball tournament setup because we know exactly what weeks are going to matter the most. We know we need the huge upside. But outside of that, like, it's really not a big thing for me. If other people are going to make big adjustments based on the strength of schedule, I'm happy to let them. To me, like, the biggest issue with a lot of the situational analysis and, you know, it really applies more to Dynasty than it does to redraft, and a lot of my content's Dynasty related, is always, you know, I have the saying, my bio, talent always wins, because I'm not a big fan of where we really put that situational analysis first, because the issue is we're not actually very good at predicting these things. Right, like to me, especially defense, it's the work of Football Outsiders that have done this, and Josh Hermsmeyer as well, that the correlation between DVOA, which is, you know, a top defensive efficiency metric year to year, it's 0.09. like, it's not very high. So should we expect the best defenses last year to be the best defense this year? Sure. You know, should we be looking at these defenses and trying to figure out, looking at the rosters, you know, who's going to be the best? Sure, that helps, but there's going to be tons of injuries on the defensive side of the ball. There's going to be regression. There's going to be coaching changes, scheme changes, guys that progress and regress. So, you know, a lot of the times there's teams that we look at in preseason, oh, that's a mouthwatering matchup. Turns out they're middle of the pack. Oh, that's a bad defense. What if they're a really good defense? What if they start the season? I mean, I remember it was the Saints a few years ago. They started the season like they were the worst defense in the entire NFL. By the end of the season, they were a top 10 unit.
Yeah.
So these things can even change in season. So I don't ever want to be in a spot where I'm banking on the strength of schedule as a reason for making a decision. And then it turns out that that wasn't even the reason in the first place. And beyond that, it's not like teams can't transcend that strength of schedule anyways, especially if you're a good offense. There's so many things that go into a fantasy-friendly 100%. Environment. I don't mind a good offense playing another good offense that happens to have a solid defense, because they're still going to have to score to keep up. A good offense is going to overcome that. So I think it's useful in spots, but I wouldn't put that at the forefront of that analysis. That being said, we're doing a 2-hour podcast about it, so it's the most important thing on earth for sure.
My Man, fuck, you are sliding in as a guest on the True North Pod very nicely tonight, my friend, I must add. Yeah, Ty, like, how are you using strength of schedule in your analysis and your you know, your team building? Maybe not so much on the best ball side, because I know it definitely is highlighted there. But say from a dynasty perspective or like a redraft perspective.
Yeah, I mean, Jacob said everything we needed to say, right? Like, it really doesn't matter. If you wanted a black and white answer, does strength and schedule matter? Yes or no, sir. The question, answer the question, yes or no. You'd say no, right? But having said that, it's an exercise that's not unlike a lot of things we do in fantasy. We want to identify the outliers and apply the context of them being an outlier in this facet of this and roll with it, right? Because there is ways to embrace strength of schedule for sure. But it's, again, another tool that's probably more important during the season. Just goes back to the defensive discussion, right? Like, it is so historically the worst play. We mentioned adding quarterback and tight end early. No, the worst play is drafting the number one defense from the year before. That is the worst play historically. Right. But it's ironic. I actually think the Rams could be the exception, just because it's like there is no like glaring good defense that's going.
The worst play is playing in a league with DST.
Yeah, that's true. But MFL 10s, you know, they still do it.
So you're right.
But what you see is in your home league, the Rams might go in like around 12 or something. So it's just, you'd never be that guy. That's for sure.
No,
because be that guy. Defense is just
do
so
not
sticky.
Be that guy. Yeah.
And that's why we. Yeah, exactly. And that's why we have such a hard time predicting all this, is because there is so many moving parts in a 52-man roster with, you know, only a 16-game sample size to go off from the year before. And so that's why there's just almost negative correlations. Like, basically what I'm saying is that when you read about teams, especially having a negative strength of schedule, there's actually an inverse relationship with that, meaning we can buy the public perception of who has a poor strength of schedule. Meaning we're getting discounts in our fantasy drafts on those players. And another thing that we really, really need to hammer home for the strength of schedule episode is how people calculate it. So the one thing you just want to completely ignore is when people are using last year's data, specifically last year's win totals, to predict this year's strength of schedule. It's just ridiculous. You don't want to use a Jaguars one win team to predict how they're going to be this year. It just makes no sense. Yet you still see big outlets doing this. So it's just crazy. And I pointed out to you, Trav, that the Eagles were one of those teams this year who, you know, easily have the best strength of schedule per last year's win totals. But when you calculate it properly, it's more middle of the road. And it all of a sudden doesn't even factor into a conversation when it comes to the Eagles, especially when you add in the lack of home games and the late season bye and all that in playoffs. So it's a really noisy topic. And really, we're just trying to identify those outliers of outliers. Right. And just put it into, you know, a little bit better context than what you'll hear from the market, because we also want to be absorbing this information so we can either prove it correct or disprove it, and then buy on those perceptions in the market, in our dynasty leagues or in our redraft leagues or in ADP and best ball.
Yeah, absolutely, Ty. And just to throw it out there for any listeners, I know the main resource that you stand by for strength of schedule and that you showed me a while ago and that I stand by as well is sharpfootballstats.com. Checking it all out. Like it is incredible. You can filter it by where their opponent ranks in passing defensive efficiency, explosive passing defense efficiency. Like, it is insane what you can do on the sharp strength of schedule stuff. So we love that, as well as our friends over at fantasypoints.com do put some strength of schedule stuff out as we approach the season. And I know Scott Barrett put out a tweet today about quarterback strength of schedules, and he had them all listed on who's got the easier and the harder schedules.
Scott Barrett's done some of the best player strength of schedule breakdowns, even going back to his PFF days for sure. But I just wanted to say that Sharp Football is the guy you should steal off, because it's the guy Las Vegas is stealing off for their sports books.
Yeah. And he's got one of the best mustaches in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
Easily.
Ty, what are you talking about? That duster is fucking beautiful.
It looks fake, I'll say that.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of it, right?
Because he's like a young... It looks like, real.
Until I can try and pull it off him. That's not
he's like a
man,
young,
baby.
Like cleanish looking dude. You
that's
know what I mean?
That's a man, baby.
Like, he doesn't have like that weathered mustache skin. Like, he looks like he should have a baby face, but he's just got this big fucking caterpillar and it's beautiful. It'd be like if you grew a mustache, Ty. If you grew a mustache, it would be fucking incredible. And Jacob and I would probably grow beautiful blonde bastards is what we would grow.
You know how great it is to do podcasting when you have blonde facial hair? You can get away with not shaving so easily.
Totally.
Because like, I'll look in the mirror and I'll be like, oh man, I look a little dusty today. And then I'll look in the camera. It's like, you wouldn't fucking know a thing. So
issue is that my stash comes in way harder. So it looks like I'm shaved on the sides, but I have.
You look like Warren Sharp.
You know who I actually think I kind of look like? I think I kind of look like Officer Jim Dangle from Reno 911 when I have the stash.
Nice.
Yeah. Always wanted to do him for Halloween. Always wanted to do him for Halloween because I think I would rock it. But I digress.
Should we get off the peach fuzz here?
Yeah. Let's stop talking about blonde facial pubic hairs. And Ty, why don't you get us into some of these 2021 best strength of schedule teams that we're looking at?
So the 49ers is one that just really stands out because every team's opponent's average is at least 8 wins when it comes to Vegas DraftKings sports books, except the 49ers, who average their opponents average a win total of 7.7. So just by far and away, statistically the best strength of schedule. And even like that doesn't factor in the Green Bay Packers, who, by the way, are completely off the board right now until Aaron Rodgers makes up his mind. Right. They don't even have a win total on sportsbooks, but you can give them the best win total in football and the 49ers would still have a schedule against an average set of opponents who are projected to be below 500. And it's because they play Jacksonville, Philadelphia, Cincy, Detroit, and Houston. So all these teams are 6.5 win total teams or lower. And that's the most in football by far. So they also get games against Chicago, Atlanta. So this is a really nice strength of schedule. So the 49ers do have that early bye week, and we kind of touched on it. Like, it feels like the floor is that week 7 that we'll see Trey Lance. But we didn't really talk about Jacob. Are you upgrading or downgrading the weapons with Trey Lance in over Jimmy Garoppolo?
Man, I'm not like caring a whole ton, to be honest with you. I think like I'm upgrading by proxy because it feels like everyone else is downgrading. I'll say this. I'm downgrading Debo because Jimmy Garoppolo can't really throw. So he just sort of checks it down. I mean, Debo had, what was it last year? Had this crazy stat where he was averaging something like 8 yards per target, but he had negative air yards.
Yeah.
So he was basically, you know, he was pretty much a running back. I would downgrade him when it goes to Trey Lance because I think with Lance, right? I mean, we've always seen this with mobile quarterbacks. Their check down is their legs. So they're going to be running around the pocket. They're going to be looking downfield. If there's nothing open downfield, they're just going to take off and run. You know, they can do what Debo can do on the ground. So I would downgrade him. They don't throw to running backs anyways, so I wouldn't really worry too much about that. Ayuk and Kittle, I think it's kind of a net neutral. I think that Lance is going to be more willing to push the ball down the field than Jimmy Garoppolo is. That's going to benefit them, but you're going to see less pass attempts overall. I also think you're going to just see a massive downgrade in pass attempts no matter who starts, because their defense last year was completely eroded. So, you know, Nick Mullins, when he was there, he was also horrible. So they'd start all these games, you know, behind because Nick Mullins would be out there throwing picks, and then their defense would be not very good, and they just have to throw a lot to come back. And Ayuk was just, you know, ratcheting up targets. But I think it's kind of priced in at this point. I think people already have concerns. I mean, Brandon Ayuk's rookie season is phenomenal. If you just look at what he was able to do from a production standpoint, from a target share standpoint, coming off of an injury where he missed camp with a hamstring pull, and I know people were hurt, but there was a lot of other rookie wide receivers who didn't have a whole lot going out around them and didn't do anything near what Brandon Ayuk did, right? You can look at Ruggs, Edwards, Pittman, Rager, you know, N'Keal Harry, certainly. So to me, like, the idea that it's just, oh, well, everyone else was hurt, so obviously Brandon Ayuk was going to be a wide receiver one. It's like, no, obviously he wasn't. Good. Like, he did that because he's really good. I think he's like a mid wide receiver two this year, maybe low end. I think Kittle obviously is still a top tight end, but I'd probably put him third for 2021. And Debo, I think, is going to be more that flex weapon because I haven't seen enough out of Debo yet to see that he's going to be that complete wide receiver. I think if he's going to be that close to the line of scrimmage guy, it's going to be tough. The good thing in their favor is that team does not throw to running backs at all. They throw to really low rate running backs, and they're not going to throw to anyone else. because I couldn't even name the third wide receiver. Can anybody name the third wide receiver?
Well, I think it was
like Richie James or like.
I think it was Jerick McKinnon last year because he like they didn't throw to the running back a lot by any means, but relative to how they have been in the past, he got like I think he got like mid 40s in targets.
I'm telling you, the 49ers,
like, in terms of like WR3, is it is it Richie James?
Yeah. Probably.
It's going to be Richie James with like Kevin Bourne and those guys going out.
Right, so it doesn't exist.
But I do, I would say, like, just like they did throw to the running backs. It's just that it went to like four different ones, like Coleman, if you include Kyle Juszczyk in that conversation.
Yeah, so. That's true. Yeah,
but I think those are targets that could easily go to Ayuk and Debo, if not like just be incorporated into rush attempts, anyways. Like, I think this offense is just going to be really solid. And I agree with what you're the point you're trying to make that this is going to be a relatively condensed offense, no matter who's at quarterback. And it's going to be a relatively successful job for. You know, whoever's that quarterback is going to be put in a pretty good, you know, position to succeed. Before we leave the Bay Area, guys, San Francisco has the best playoff strength of schedule for fantasy as well. At Cincinnati week 14 versus Atlanta week 15, at Tennessee week 16, and Houston week 17. Trav, who do you think could be like a true league winner from this offense? Do you think it will be Trey Sermon? Is it Trey Lance in a super flex league? What do you think?
I think it could probably be any of these running backs, right? It could still even be Jeff Wilson, could be Elijah Mitchell. I think the only guy that it's not going to be is probably Raheem Mostert because
I think he definitely has a 75-yard touchdown against the Houston Texans.
No, but I think like I think of league winner as a guy that you maybe got for cheap, right? So I think the only difference with him is that I'm seeing from what I'm seeing on Twitter and whatnot, he's still going in like some sixth rounds. So I don't think like. I think he's meant to be a guy who's relied upon on your team as opposed to where you're getting, you know, Jeff Wilson way fucking later and he can give you 2 15 plus point games in that playoff schedule because there's something about Niners running backs that they just fucking get hurt all the time.
And he can still be the goal line back too.
And we know that they're four deep. Like they are four deep and we want pieces of all four of those guys because they're going to get a shot at some point. Jamichael Hasty came in last year and he was just outside of top 24 numbers for a couple of weeks. So I think any running back in this team, and just because the passing offense is so condensed, I don't think you're going to get like your, my definition of a league winner say. But I do think just kind of to my McKinnon point was that most of those targets that he got were from the slot, right? Which is generally a wide receiver's work. So we could see a little bit of, uptick in that built-in volume just kind of transferring, even though it's going to be low volume, but definitely an offense we want pieces of regardless. And the backfield is where I zero in for sure. Trey Sermon, I'm loving grabbing him in the mid second round of rookie drafts right now. Like fucking all day, make that automatic.
I'm so glad you're not a Mostert guy. Raheem Mostert's the fucking rake.
He's the rake.
When you log into your best ball app and you see rake 11%, and then you go and you scroll to ADP and it says Raheem Mostert round 6. You go, okay, that's the rake, it's paid for. Because whoever takes Raheem Mostert, you're an absolute dum-dum. Like, he's not going to make the roster. They just drafted two running backs. They signed Wayne Gallman. They saved $3.5 million when they released Raheem Mostert. I think the odds that Raheem Mostert, who's 29, who they did just fine without last year, and who they just added three running backs, they've made their intentions crystal clear. Like they have five running backs, and that's not even including Hasty. So they have six running backs, Hasty. Right? If you're a Hasty guy, so they have six running backs.
Juszczyk.
So they're obviously not going to cut Trey Sermon. They just traded up for him. I don't think they're going to cut Jeff Wilson because he costs them absolutely nothing. He's a he's a UDFA. I don't imagine they're going to cut Elijah Mitchell. They just drafted him. They might put him on the practice squad. They just signed Wayne Gallman. Raheem Mostert has been proven expendable by their offseason moves. He's always hurt. He's 29, and he costs the most. So to me, I would be very surprised if he's on this roster come week one. And then, you know, you're probably looking at a little bit more of a condensed situation. I think Trey Sermon is fantastic value right now. I mean, there's this idea that it's an entrenched committee. Kyle Shanahan hasn't always run a committee. When he had Devontae Freeman, they gave him a lot of work, especially that first year. He was the RB1 in fantasy. Alfred Morris had a ton of work. So the issue is they've just had a bunch of guys, right? Like they've had a bunch of talented guys, but it's either been undersized, talented running backs who keep getting hurt. Shout out to my guy, Matt Breida. Or it's Plotter, Jags, like a Carlos Hyde or a Tevin Coleman. So I don't know if Trey Sermon is going to be at the level of like an Alfred Morris or Devonta Freeman. But what if he is, right? He has the proper size. He has the proper athleticism.
And we saw him throw to Hyde. Like Hyde had some receptions and he was an RB1 that year.
88 receptions, I think.
I thought he was kind of good and he obviously isn't. So,
and he didn't even have to be good to be an RB1 in that situation that Sermon is now
exactly.
in.
Exactly. So I think Sermon, if he's good enough, he'll be the guy. I don't know if he's good enough, but if he is, he'll be the guy. And if he's not, you should be drafting Jeff Wilson in like round 14. Certainly ahead of Raheem Mostert. Yeah. He goes in round 6. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you heard it, Edward Norton. You heard it. Raheem Mostert is the rake of life.
also, I would just like to say thank you for the Matt Breida love, because we are a pro Matt Breida podcast over here.
Misunderstood. Genius, that guy.
100%.
I can quit Matt Breida. I just don't want to. So the Denver Broncos want a Matt Breida like turnaround in 2021. They have a really easy strength of schedule after having a really difficult strength of schedule last year. They also play 5 teams with 6.5 win totals or worse. The Bengals, the Lions, the Jets, the Jaguars, the Eagles. They play Vegas twice. They also get games against Washington and the Football Giants. That Washington one will be good. That's just like arguably two of the top defenses that are relying entirely on their defenses, maybe. And that'll be a Kendall Fuller reunion revenge game. Who could be the corner who puts the Broncos over the top. Stallone.
he's gonna serve up a dirt nap for Ryan Fitzpatrick as the starter, maybe.
Yeah,
that's tragic.
Yeah. So, you know, that is a lot of easy games, but this is a fantasy show and it is still Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater trying to steal all these weapons. Portland, Judy, Novan, Tim Patrick, and AOK.
I put on for my city, Drew Lock for my city.
He is the best answer.
Like, I know Jeezy.
He's a 10 out of 10 on swag too. Like Drew Lock is the guy that if he was good, like he would be the biggest fan favorite.
He thinks he is. So
I love him. To be honest, I fucking
really
love
see.
The guy.
I refuse to make him any semblance of a fan favorite until he does something on the
field. Well, I think I just love him.
It's kind of like Amon-Ra St. Brown's blue check mark on Twitter. It's like, yeah, it's great. It's awesome. But is it, you know, warranted?
That's such a fucking Amon-Ra thing to do.
I think for me, it's because I strive to be a future career backup that just sits on the sideline busting dance moves. You know what I mean? I think that's the best job in the world. Maybe I'm just jelly.
I just love it because we've all met about 80 Drew Locks, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's a dude who's just C's get degrees in his way all the way through college. He's showing up to the frat house. He's doing keggers. Like, you know that Drew Lock. He was the dude that had the hottest girl at the party, and the girl's like, man, we should get a little more serious. He's like, man, just take it easy, breezy. Like, Drew Lock, like, man, that guy's a legend.
Straight out of Blue Mountain State.
I wish that I had his undeserved confidence. That guy is so good.
Fake it till you make it.
The game against the Chargers last year, and I remember this because I had a really good DFS tourney going, and I had Judy in the lineup, and Drew Lock was absolutely cheeks for about 3.5 quarters of that game, and he starts chucking touchdowns towards the end. And he's pulling his like boom, boom, and I'm like, bro, you've been ass for like 9 games. You made one good throw, and you're pimping it. I was in on the idea of Drew Lock. I still really hope that he's good, but I don't know. I think he probably starts week one if they don't trade for Aaron Rodgers. I think he'll probably give that job up real quick because he's not nearly as good as he thinks he is. But I'll keep drafting their weapons and being disappointed. Why not? They have all of my favorite players.
Well, what about the run game? Because like this strength of schedule is really, really advantageous. And then this team's defense, I expect a huge bounce back on that side of the ball, which all kind of lends to the run game. And, you know, they traded up to draft baby Javonte. So what do we think happens in this?
Always trade up for a running back. You got to do that. You got to establish it.
Especially in the top of the second. I like that.
Or anywhere in the second or third. Ask the Rams. It's
totally.
It's money. Yeah.
One note for the Broncos tie, just looking at some of the sharp football stuff is, and I know this stuff is kind of based more on like last year's statistics, so it's take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, but they have the second best schedule versus opponent run defense efficiency. So it's going to be a really good schedule for that run defense. And even if you look at explosive rush defense, Denver has the sixth best schedule per Sharp Football. So I think, you know, we give that a little bit of buffer room, positive or negative, of course, being that it's based on last year. But the people that we trust are showing us that this is going to be fruitful for that backfield, right? And so I'm still attacking Javonte.
Yeah, who do you think it's fruitful for? Because, you know, obviously it sounds more exciting for Javonte Williams. We want it to be more exciting for Javonte Williams, but I would argue that, like, a Melvin Gordon truther, if those still exist in Wisconsin anywhere, that...
Well, they exist, and I talked to one the other day. He was like, I'm a Melvin Gordon stan. I was like, why?
Why? Yeah. Why? But yeah, so why might be because he could be hot, stay hot, and just, you know, Javonte could be the RB2. I don't believe that, but I think there's, you know, a small avenue that could happen because of how easy the strength schedule is.
I think there's there's going to be plenty of pie to go around too. Like, I think Javonte gets a few carries even early season.
And Melvin Gordon is probably falling down draft boards, I would imagine. I haven't drafted him once this offseason.
Going right next to Mostert. Draft, so. Right next to Mostert.
I love it. Yes.
Literally, I saw him go back to back the other day.
Huh. Right in That's round an interesting six. One. Yeah. Who do you take there in a redraft or a best ball setting?
Yeah, I have no interest in Melvin Gordon because I just, yeah. To me, like, what's like, all I'm hoping for is that he's able to hold off Javonte Williams. I see a lot of ways it could go wrong. First of all, he could be cut too. He's worth not a whole lot against the cap. George Patton comes from Minnesota. He went and got Mike Boone, who's his guy that he signed as an undrafted free agent. You know, and one of the great legends of preseason DFS.
Oh, buddy.
He brings. So yeah, if you're a complete gambling degenerate, you love Mike Boone because he was slotted into that MVP slot. So yeah, they got Mike Boone in there. They've got, I believe, Royce Freeman is still on the roster. He's still breathing. So it's a team where if they cut Melvin Gordon, they're fine. Like, they're gonna have Royce Freeman, who's a capable runner. He's really good in pass protection. They're gonna have Javonte Williams. They can ease in, and they got Mike Boone, who's the GOAT. So Melvin, I think that he probably stays in the roster, but to me, it's like 70-30. I just want to flag that he could get cut. And if he stays in the roster, then, like, it's like, what are we doing, right? He's going to get carries. I don't think there's going to be a world where he's going to get 100% of the carries. He wasn't getting 100% of the carries last year when Philip Lindsay was healthy. And he wasn't really that good last year. He kind of ended up at the RB14 because he accumulated, and that's what he does. He accumulates. He's not efficient. He's not very good. He's not even as good as he used to be, and that was always not particularly good. So I think
when he was benefiting from, like, high market share and league leading goal line touches in right. San Diego, yeah.
And, like, I, you know, it's on me. Like, I drafted him last year because I don't think very much of Philip Lindsay, and they brought him over to Denver, and it looked like he was going to be the clear bell cow, and he kind of sort of was. But yeah. I mean, Javonte Williams is a heck of a lot better than Philip Lindsay. I mean, Javonte Williams comes in; he's a feature back. He's 212 pounds. He's not, you know, 180-pound JV and Hawkins look alike with an afro. So I think Javonte Williams is going to take over that job sooner rather than later. And with Melvin, it's like, what are you hoping for? You're hoping for sooner? Mm-hmm. Well, ideally, you want a lot of points towards the end of the season. That's when it's the most important part of your fantasy playoffs. So, and I don't see a situation where you're going to be able to trade Melvin for a whole lot, because I think most people expect that Melvin's going to start off the year decently strong and then tail off. So him in the sixth, I just see zero upside to that. I'd rather have plenty of guys go later. I'd rather have Fournette, who at least has, I think, more of an opportunity to a sort of all-purpose fantasy-friendly game, and he's tied to Tom Brady, not Drew Locke. I'd rather have Zach Moss, who I think has a possibility to turn into an actual all-purpose running back. And if we're just looking at sort of these high upside timeshare guys, you know, Melvin's not first on my list in a Drew Locke offense. I'd go down to those other guys we were talking about before, James Robinson's, Darrell Henderson's, Tony Pollard's. You know, I think all those guys have more juice than Melgo has at this point. Javonte, though, is interesting because you're getting Javonte right now, round five, even into round six sometimes. I got him in round six the other day. I mean, imagine two things happen. Imagine that they trade for Aaron Rodgers. They do trade for Aaron Rodgers. That's a significant cap hit. So I think that makes it even more likely Melvin Gordon gets cut. And now you're looking at Javonte Williams as the clear, undisputed bell cow in an Aaron Rodgers offense with an early season schedule. Mm-hmm. Now he's Now he's like a round two pick. Massive boner. So I think, you know, you're all of a sudden, like, that's a great way. If you can draft these risers in best ball, that's huge, because then, you know, if everyone that gets Javonte in round six, he's going to go in round two or three if that happens. And yeah. now you just have better rosters than anyone else can create, right? Because mm-hmm. everyone else that has Javonte, if he goes off, they're getting him round two and round three. And you're basically trading a sixth round pick for a third round pick. And you have a massive advantage if Javonte ends up being a league winner when you go to the tournament stage and you also have whoever you took in round three. So I'm smashing all of the Denver players in best ball. I'm hoping to get Aaron Rodgers other than Melvin Gordon.
Now, that's another great point. These are the outside of the box range of outcomes. Even if it's just a 10% likelihood that you believe, whatever you believe, you're buying on that, especially in those bigger tournament formats.
Could be Deshaun Watson too, right?
Could like, be Deshaun, right?
Like Deshaun Watson or Aaron Rodgers. Sign me the fuck up.
Just I the also suspicious think, like, passing of Justin Fields at 9. It feels like something was coming down the pipe. Yeah,
and they're just going to be itching to get their like top 50 pick running back in that offense, right? So the second Javonte flashes, I bet you even if Melvin Gordon has like 150 yard and a 2-touchdown game, if Javonte flashes for like a 45 yard run, I think Javonte instantly will start to get more carries just because he provides way more excitement. So that's all I got on Denver, Ty. Let's get rolling so we can get through some of these teams, brother.
Yeah.
So the Buccaneers have a top five schedule. I mean, top five on Sharp Football, top five in terms of last year's win rates. And, you know, they only have a few games against teams with 10 plus win totals. They do have a lot of tough games, though, because like they played the Rams on the road, New England and Foxborough, games against Buffalo, Miami. The divisions don't line up great for Tampa Bay this year. But what I wanted to ask you guys is, it is going to get painted as a top five strength of schedule. It will push these guys up boards a little bit. Do we want to be tied to the Tampa Bay passing game for fantasy? And what do we think is going to happen with the backfield here?
Passing game, yes. The running backs depends on the price for me. Like I want.
Well, what if in the passing game? I'm saying, like, if we see a little bit of an uptick over the next couple weeks with some news coming out, do you think you want Brady over Stafford? Do you want Mike Evans over some of those guys in the third and fourth round, Chris Godwin? Are you pushing any of these guys up because of the strength of schedule?
Not really. I think it was already going to be a pretty high powered passing game. And I think this is a team that can transcend a hard schedule, right? I think before the show, I can't recall if you've mentioned it on the show yet, Ty, but how Buffalo had an awful strength of schedule last year, but they just came and kicked everybody's ass. I think both of you guys have actually mentioned that on this show. And I think it could be a situation like that. Like Tampa is going to score the points. They're going to put up their points just because they have all these weapons and Tom Brady's probably going to throw 40 plus touchdowns. So buy into a piece of that, like stacking some of those guys in best ball. It's a little bit pricey when you're looking at stacking an Evans and a Godwin, but if you stack like an Evans Gronk AB, I think you have a majority of the red zone target share there.
And there's not many teams you can, start to build the best team arguably in real life football starting without, with the ability of adding a couple players before you start that build. I also just want to mention how sticky and noisy all this is because we all agreed that early season over late season strength of schedule. But when you're analyzing strength of schedule for a team like Tampa Bay, who also has that late bye week, so we kind of like their late season strength of schedule, and we can kind of buy their late season strength of schedule a little more than, say, another team who's much less predictable and more volatile over the season. So they get Buffalo week 14. I think that's going to be a shootout. It's also a home game for Tampa Bay.
Smack that bad boy on that.
Atlanta in week 13, Ty, before you move into 15.
Oh, really?
Yep. Atlanta before Buffalo in week 13.
And really quick. We're Tampa Bay were league winners last year. They were league winners in fantasy with their easy strength schedule last year. They also get the Saints in week 15. The Saints defense,
please,
I think, is going to be a lot worse.
Please be Jameis.
Yeah, totally. Carolina week 16, Jets week 17.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
be humming.
AB, great value on Antonio Brown. He's going outside the top 40 wide receivers. You got into the offense, like, it was pretty equal between the three of them. I mean, he was seeing less snaps than the other two, but if you just look at targets, if you look at yards per route run, it was really pretty evenly split between the three of those guys. I think Evans and Godwin are okay at round four, which is where they're going, but I think they're only okay because they're going to have huge weeks because they're super talented players, but it's just such a distributed passing game that it's hard to really rely on them every single week. I think they're fine in best ball, but Antonio Brown in round 9-10.
Yeah.
I was getting Antonio Brown. He was still a free agent back in round 13-14. I mean, and a dynasty take two. This draft class is butt after like 2.5. So to me, like, if I can get Antonio Brown for the 2.8, the 2.9, I mean, I think he's going to be a wide receiver two this year. He was a wide receiver two last year. I don't see any signs that he slowed down. You're going to have tough weeks because, you know, it's, everyone's going to have tough weeks in this offense because it's just going to be a certain day. You know, the targets are going to go to Evans. They're going to go to Godwin. They're going to go to Brown. But he has massive blow-up potential, and Brady loves force-feeding them the ball, so I think he's a good value. And, you know, I think both Fournette and Jones are pretty decent running backs if you're doing a zero RB build. At you know, cost, I think, yeah. Right? Like, I think you're going to see big games from both of them. I think it's going to be a weird committee where I don't know how much the roles are going to be totally defined. I'd certainly rather have Fournette than Jones because at least with Fournette, we know that the opportunity exists for him to be a full three-down bell cow back if Jones fumbles the job away or if he gets hurt. With Jones, he's so incompetent in the pass game. His ceiling is probably more RB2, but I think both of them are decent enough values.
Might need Gio to suck too. I want to go to Atlanta. I know nobody wants to believe in Gio. I'm just saying he had like five offers. Boys. I'm just saying the guy had like five Deshaun offers and decided to go to Tampa.
Deshaun Vaughn is super dead.
We'll see.
What, you guys don't want to? You guys don't want to spend some time on Keyshawn? Okay.
Nope.
No, Keyshawn is dead. Yeah, Keyshawn
is dead. So dead. I mean, Bruce Arians said he was gonna have a breakout year.
I could have told you guys. Yeah, he was dead before he went to V.
That's the Kangol killer in action, Ty. killing motherfuckers dead.
So speaking of which, people think the Atlanta Falcons offense is going to be doing a lot of that this year. I think they're a really interesting team to bring up for strength of schedule because they're popping up in a lot of people's winning categories. I would argue against that. I think they're kind of a pretty tough strength of schedule just because so I'm looking at it here. They play that game in London. I mentioned they have just six home games all season long, the least by far. So they have a bye week in week six, I believe. And then they're going to be playing 11 straight games after that London game in the bye week. They play nine teams that have nine win totals or high, 9-9. And they also get four or five games against some bad teams. So it's a high variance boom or bust schedule. But Trav, when you dig in deep, you mentioned earlier that I think Atlanta leaves the dome late in the season to Buffalo. Yeah, it's championship week and it's going to be snowing, and that sucks for that offense. So I think there's a lot of reasons to actually be a little bit hesitant because of the strength of schedule. Atlanta is one of those teams that I really pinpointed where I'm not necessarily fading them, but I am, you know, I might stop and think about it for a week before I make up my mind.
Yeah, man. Well, and you look at it like starting at week nine, just if we're looking at even like the rush defense,
they're not going to run.
Well,
run it zero times.
Yeah.
Agreed. Exactly. So I think you can full fade it though, right? Like couple that offensive scheme that they're not going to do it. Plus the fact that they've got starting in like in week 11, they got the Patriots, week 13, the Bucs, week 15, the Niners, the Bills should be much improved. They got the Saints in there somewhere too. So like, these are pretty good run defense. So I think we can throw that right out the window, unfortunately for Mike D.
But I mean, they're going to be underdogs in all those games too.
And those teams are no slouches in passing defense either though. Right. Like,
but I will say for Mike Davis, like we saw Gurley still getting those 1 yard plunges a lot. And if Mike Davis is involved in the passing game, which I think they would be ridiculously stupid to not involve him in that facet of the game. I think there's still room for him to pay off his ADP. Cause it's, I don't know if his ADP is going to shoot up. Like I think Myles Gaskin, some of these guys, Javonte Williams, we talked about it. Like these guys are going to continue to ascend throughout the offseason, but I don't know if Mike Davis is one of those guys because of all the weapons.
Probably not. I'm sketched out on Davis, man. Like he's not still going round 4 or 5. I'm seeing. I think he's super replacement level, and I'm expecting some cut candidates. Like that. That's my biggest concern. Is I think that we already saw with Kerryon Johnson where he got cut. I mean, there's a lot of teams that are going to have to cut guys, right? We mentioned Mostert. We mentioned possibly Gordon. Yeah. There's usually a couple surprises. And I just foresee a circumstance with Davis and possibly the same with Gaskin where they're going to bring someone in. I mean, we saw it last year with Bell. We saw it with Fournette. And, you know, if it's like if Melvin Gordon and Mike Davis, you're probably going to go take a seat. But even if it's someone smaller that just eats into that pie, like you need him to be quite clearly the bell cow back right now. And I mean, he's just not very good. Like, he's fine, but he's like a 28-year-old, not super athletic running back. I just don't get jacked up about adding Mike Davis to my roster in the fourth round. And I see that as kind of his ceiling. So I'm out on Mike Davis, but I understand, like, he is a very confident pass catcher. They're going to pass it a lot. So if they do check down to him, and we've seen Matt Ryan, you know, give a running back a solid pass game load, maybe it does work out. I'm just a little skeptical.
I agree. He's probably not like someone you're going to label as a buy. I think Ridley and Julio, excuse me, are the only guys that you're like confident in buying, I would say. I will say Kyle Pitts plays four games in Florida. I'm just looking, Tampa Bay twice, Miami, nice, and Jacksonville. Just saying.
The fans are going to be going wild.
I'll give you a real quick one. I'd go and spend an 18th round best ball pick on Alameda Zacchaeus and just bet on Julio getting traded.
Yeah,
that would be interesting. Yeah.
Let's talk about that Jaguars game, because not only are we going to have the Pitts homecoming to Florida, we're going to have the Pitts Tebow together on the same, both playing the same fucking position, coming back to Florida. The Gators fans are going to be out in full force. Shout out to D Brown and Josh Smokey Hill Nelson as our resident Gator fans on the True North team.
And shout out to Jules, because I'm going to go to the Packers here really quickly, because they brought in Blake Bortles, guys, which any way you slice it has to be condemnation in their confidence level in Jordan Love running this offense. So before into any strength of schedule info, you know, actually they do, like, the Green Bay Packers have a difficult strength of schedule, I would say. But the Packers also got a ton, like, the schedule makers gave them a ton of primetime games. Do we think that's an Aaron Rodgers sign that he's back?
I might need to flex that shit if it's not Aaron Rodgers. Otherwise, that's going to be nobody wants to watch Bortles in prime time. I don't think we're going to have to. I don't know. I don't really see Bortles starting, because I put out a tweet sort of the ranking the likelihood of outcomes. I think I just can't imagine a situation where they trade Aaron Rodgers and then don't get a quarterback back, right? Like, if you trade him to Oakland, you're going to, or Vegas, you're going to get Carr. If you trade him to Denver, they're going to say, which one of our shitty quarterbacks do you want? And they'll say, okay, I don't know. Drew Lock, fine.
Repping it is.
So they're getting
Kendall Hinton.
The other thing with Blake Bortles, I get that we know who Blake Bortles is because he was once in the NFL. He wasn't even on a team last year. There were 96 quarterbacks signed to NFL teams last year. Yeah. Blake Bortles wasn't one of them.
Wolford is like a 10 times better version of him.
Yeah, right. Like the Rams were like John Wolford. Right. Like freaking, I mean, we're a Canadian show. NFL teams were like Chris Streveler. We want you over Blake Bortles. And I mean, I'm from Winnipeg. I'm a Blue Bombers fan.
Former
Chris
Bomber.
Streveler could not start for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and the Cardinals preferred to play him in a must-win game than Blake Bortles.
He's Tim Tebow. Chris Streveler is Tim Tebow.
He actually is Tim Tebow, except he's like way cooler, because Tim Tebow is like a evangelical guy, whereas Chris Streveler is like rocking out in a fur coat, drinking beer out of a gray cup.
He's like the Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's like the Stone Cold version of Tim Tebow.
Right, so he's just a way better Tebow. But Tebow's the point is, Blake Bortles sucks. And the NFL thinks that he sucks, so he's nothing to me. Like, they don't. They lost Tim Boyle. I heard
people were mad
at my tweet because I said that Tim Boyle was more likely to start than Blake Bortles. For the record, I believe that. What, you think they call the lines? They're like, we want Tim Boyle back. They're gonna be like, how dare you take Tim Boyle from us? He's an integral part of our team moving forward. No, absolutely not. So whatever. I learned that Tim Boyle is no longer in the team. I apologize for spreading fake news about Tim Boyle. I'm sorry I wasn't up to date on that.
How dare you?
If Rodgers doesn't show up to camp, like Jordan Love, what if he needs a Gatorade? All wide receivers are going to be standing around on the field waiting for him to finish his freaking Gatorade before he goes and throws them in an accurate pass. They need Blake Bortles to come in. Blake Bortles is a great fit with Jordan Love because he's going to give the wide receivers a similar level of accuracy that they're going to grow accustomed to. And it's going to prime them for all playing with Love is. No, I think that they're going to get someone back in a trade, or Rodgers will stay, or they'll get like Nick Foles or someone if they truly don't believe in Love. I'm rooting for Love, man. I mean, he's had, if anyone's familiar with his backstory, like that's a driven dude. He's been through a ton. I feel really bad for the kid that he's in this spot where everyone's blaming him for this franchise breaking apart. It's not his fault, man. Like, he just wants to go out there and play football, and maybe he's not good enough at it. And you know, that remains to be seen. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm rooting like hell for Jordan Love if he gets an opportunity. I don't love the odds, but if that's what it comes down to, that's what it comes down to. If it is Jordan Love, I mean, you can't feel very good about anyone in this offense, right? Like Aaron Jones going to the first, that's not going to age well if it's a Jordan Love offense. Davante Adams is more of a back-end wide receiver one to me, and everyone else is dead. I don't know what you guys think.
I think the gunslinger mentality of Jordan Love will keep Davante Adams afloat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't think his red zone efficiency is going to be near what it was. So that would be a major candidate for regression for Davante Adams with Jordan Love in there versus Aaron Rodgers. I think like overall he would be kept afloat based on volume, but his ceiling comes down and his efficiency obviously comes down too without one of the greatest of all time there.
Yeah, like Davante Adams' 30% market share would literally be cut by like 20 or 30 targets. He could still see a league-leading market share, but it'd be like what we saw with Michael Thomas under Taysom Hill, in my opinion. Like it would really take a big hit under Jordan Love. And also just from Jordan Love's perspective, like this guy could come out and have the worst season we've ever seen in 2021 and then come back in 2022 and have like the greatest season ever. That's the kind of prospect I consider Jordan Love. Like I have no idea what we're going to get from him on a week to week, season to season. And I think we saw that in college too.
I mean, he's always, it's so funny that he sort of started out this way. Cause it's almost like he's repeating itself. Like, he showed up in high school. He wasn't remotely ready. They wouldn't even let him play quarterback. He was playing basketball. He was playing defense. He was super skinny, lanky kid. Benchy comes quarterback, ends up being a stud in high school. Shows up to college, not even close to ready. You know, the offensive coordinator at the time said, you know, not even close, 1 in 10 shot. And then he redshirts that year, starts the next year. He was horrible. All of a sudden comes in that next year, fantastic, you know, and then he falls back a little bit in the junior year, but he really had that fantastic sophomore year. We're starting to see history repeat itself. I wouldn't write him off just yet. He was always supposed to be a project. You know, he's a guy that he started playing quarterback late. He developed really late physically. He's a toolsy guy. Whether it's going to come together, I don't know. The hit rate on these toolsy types of guys is not super high. I think it's far more likely he's going to be, you know, Drew Locke than Pat Mahomes, but we'll see. I just don't want to write the dude off before he's played a game. And I think that, you know, a lot of people saw him miss a net in practice last August and they decided that he's condemned forever. I think that's a little bit much for me.
But anyway, this shakes out. I just wanted to say that the Packers do end up with a pretty tough strength of schedule this year, just with like a bunch of games against 9+ win teams. None of those teams being in their division either. And they get like the AFC North and NFC West. So you have Baltimore, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Rams, Seahawks, Cardinals, and 49ers, their older brothers. They'll get them as well. And they also get, they have to go to Arrowhead for a game against the Chiefs. They have Washington, New Orleans, lots of really tough games for Green Bay this year, which I think is all great news for the offense for fantasy football, by the way, because LaFleur, if he had it his way, this offense would run 50 plays a game, which would be brutal. but I think this is good news for things like, you know, Davante Adams seeing that 25-30% market share and Aaron Jones possibly being the second best pass catcher in this offense again, being a top five running back again. Yeah. So, you know, I think this is all pretty good news for fantasy. And yeah, I actually kind of am still leaning that Aaron Rodgers is most likely back in Green
Bay. Oh, I don't think he's going anywhere either. I just think there's too much. Yeah, there's too much involved there.
It's that age-old argument. He has no leverage, but at the same time, if he really wants to make his way out of town, he could, right?
He's hosting Jeopardy, yeah. Why don't we fly through a couple more before you ride out here, Ty?
Okay, we'll do your NFC least, I guess. Let's do that then, Trav, because, you know, the Giants, I kind of wanted to get out of the way just because, they have a pretty tough strength.
I'm really glad we were in the Giants at hour 45 in, because they're the Twitter people for the Giants are a bunch of rational, logical thinkers. So you don't want them, you know, if we talk about them minute 20, they'd start sending dead horses' heads to your bed. So it's good that we're talking about them now and all the Giants, especially it's really late on the East Coast. So I'm glad the Giants fans are asleep, not listening, not watching.
Yeah, no offense, Stephanie Small. So
No offense to Steph.
Yeah. Shout out to Steffi. Shout out to Steffi. Shout out to Tyler Karp as well. It's a couple of rational Giants fans. All
Danny
the rest
from
of you
the
guys.
Danny from the Ringer.
Steffi also comes in as the voice of reason. Like if I'm ever I'm an Eagles fan, right? So I've gotten into it with my couple Giants fans in my day. And I just hey, Steffi, can you come get your people, please? And right. she says, those are not my people, but what the fuck are you talking about?
But what does that say about a society when we're talking about Steffi as a voice of reason, right?
Who's yeah. who's the famous orange guy? He's a famous New York sports guy. He's totally orange. He is
Donald Trump.
He is the worst, though. Yeah, and Trump's from New York. That's funny. But that guy that I'm thinking of that I can't remember his name, and I'm so glad I have purged his
name. Is it Coward?
No, but he's horrible too. Yeah, but he's like even worse than Fran something. He's got a very New York
Francesa.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Thank you. Yeah,
he's like weekend of Bernie's in that show. I promise.
Can't even
like,
listen to that.
Someone's doing the voice.
Yeah. Totally. And the funniest thing is the most hated guy out of all, I hate Jason Garrett more than all those people combined, is the guy who is calling plays for the New York Giants. But what I want to ask is, with Saquon coming back, what does this Giants offense look like? Because they also added Kadarius Toney at 20th overall. Kenny Golladay went to the Big Apple in free agency. So you have all these weapons in the passing game, including Saquon. But you could also say the strength of this Giants team is their defense. And then, Jason Garrett is as risk adverse as anybody in the history of existence. He's the bane of all fantasy gamers. Yeah, so what do you think they're going to run the ball? And is there any Giants that you're kind of putting your finger on as a value right now in fantasy?
Oh, I don't know, man.
Danny Dimes?
Yeah, maybe Danny Dimes, but like, I don't know, Jacob, are you investing in any of these pass catchers? Because like the only one that I've been thinking that I might kind of, because he's got a little pressure taken off, is maybe Evan Ingram.
Yeah, that's
just
the
because
that's
last year. Last year, he didn't have a great season. He dropped a fuckload of balls, but he had...
Where is he going to play, though?
He had top five tight end opportunity, and I don't think he's just out of the picture because they have all these slot options. I don't think they have any big slots, and he is that guy. So, I don't know. It's really hard to say because I feel like when we get into the rabbit hole of just talking it out, right, Ty, you're like, then
and
they got to play
ends.
More.
And
they
the tight end play, position.
Exactly. Then they got to play more four wide receiver sets to get him in there and then one of their other slot options. And are they going to play more four wide receiver sets? So a lot to flesh out there with the New York Giants. But I don't know. I think Evan Ingram is getting supremely dogged for a guy who has had top five tight end opportunity, which is all you can really ask for if you're drafting outside of the top, say, five tight ends, right?
Yeah, I'm not afraid of Ingram at all. I mean, I think he's a value. He's going outside the top 12 tight ends. I think that's crazy. He's always been a top 12 tight end. He's going to get opportunity. He's an athletic guy. You know, I don't think he's a very good player, but he's at least athletic enough that, you know, if the ball hits him in the hands and he somehow catches it, he's going to be able to run for a little bit afterwards. And he gives you some big play upside that you don't usually get out of a tight end position if Jason Garrett stops just running him on little 5-yard drag routes.
But that's my issue. Does Kadarius Toney steal the work?
No, because Kadarius Toney's nothing. Like Kadarius Toney is just,
yeah, but Evan Ingram's been nothing. Like, yeah, Evan Ingram is great after the catch. Show me, dude. Like he just hasn't been great. Like Evan Ingram has been really bad. Since his rookie season, that was really good. Yeah.
But he hasn't, and I just worry he hasn't been that bad for fantasy. Like he's been
That's what I was saying about the tight end position too. Like it might be the best guy in this offense to choose because how bad the tight end position is. Yeah.
Like let me pull up. Like he's still like honestly, it's actually a marvel that he turned he got 109 targets last year and he finished tight end 16. That's actually an accomplishment.
That is fucked.
He got one touchdown last year and he had 6 yards per target. So
Yeah,
I mean, he's not very good at this whole playing football thing, and that's definitely the biggest obstacle. When I was like the Giants offense, I'm not that concerned about the new targets coming in because Darius Slayton is horrendous. He got 96 targets last year, and he doesn't do anything. He was on the field for every single route they ran, pretty much, and he had close to 100% route participation, and he drew like 17% of the targets. That's pathetic. He's always out there running a route, and his only competition for targets was Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram, you know, who we just talked about, aren't really the greatest crew, and then like the corpse of Golden Tate when he was not a healthy and active. So the fact that Slayton couldn't do anything last year with that opportunity, we're done with him. Shepard is fine in the slot, Ingram is fine in the slot, and then Toney is fine in the slot. So it's definitely a bit of a clusterfuck. It's just the one guy is Golladay to me because he's the only guy that's on a totally different level than the rest of these guys. he's going to just lock down X wide receiver. I think he's going to be A-okay.
He's the only guy you can't point to and be like, this guy's going to take some of his work.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what Tony's role is, to be honest, because I'm looking at this offense.
I just wanted to ask you that, Jacob. Like, do you think, because we talked about it last week, that we don't think Kadarius Tony's going to play very much. Like, he just doesn't fit in this offense, especially in Jason Garrett's offense that doesn't even use pre-snap motion and shit like that. So
right.
You think he is one of those guys who a rookie who, yeah, he went in the first round, but he probably plays under 50% of the snaps as a rookie.
I have absolutely no clue what this offense looks like. Like, I know that.
Yeah, me either.
So Galladay is obviously going to play X. Engram's their starting tight end, but they usually don't use him as a traditional tight end. I guess they will this year. I don't really know. And you look at these other guys, Sterling Shepard, we know what Sterling Shepard is. He's a very good slot wide receiver. He's not a very good outside wide receiver. We've seen this. We've seen him outside when Beckham's been hurt. We've seen him in the slot. We know he's getting the slot. We know he's not good outside. So if you put – and he's, to me, he's just a better player right now than Tony is. He's a better player than Slayton is. So if you lock in Shepard in the slot, you lock in Galladay outside, like Kadarius Tony can't play outside in the NFL, guys. Like, he can't.
No,
he's
never.
He's absolutely horrendous against man coverage. He's double horrendous against press coverage. He's ridiculously dynamic athlete. If you get him scheme touches, he's going to do a ton of damage for you after the catch. He's a good player, but he's not a good outside wide receiver at all in the NFL. And so I don't understand where they're going to put him. To me, like,
and that's what we're saying. Like, how
I don't get what this offense is going to be. Like, if you just lock Slayton in at the Z, so you play Slayton or Ross, like one of them to just stretch the field, they could just go run Chris Hogan wind sprints all day. Sure, that's fine. Then you can do Galladay at X, and then I guess you play Shepard in the slot, and you bring Tony in when you feel like
that's
it.
How or I
Shepard
see it.
Gets concussed. I don't know. Like, I don't get it. I don't see how Tony gets a role in this offense. And to me, like, it's such a ridiculously bad landing spot for Tony. Like, I want him in an offense right where you're scheming him touches. But why would you scheme touches? You have freaking Saquon Barkley. Like,
that's what I said. Yeah,
I would rather just dump if you're gonna do the whole dump and chase game. I'm like, and you're gonna use him like Debo. They do that with Debo and San Fran because they don't prioritize their running backs very much. They haven't invested
and they use motion on almost every play.
Exactly.
Garrett just doesn't use pre-snap motion. Very little play action.
No sense to me.
And that's what I'm saying about why have him on the field if you're not going to manufacture touches for him, which is the only way you can get this guy to be a weapon in your offense. Makes no sense. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Gettleman going Gettleman. Howie going Howie, Trav, what do you think about your Eagles? Shit. Because your Eagles are one of those teams that will get painted by folks who do strength of schedule incorrectly as a big giant strength of schedule winner. But if you do it correctly, they are not much of a winner whatsoever. They have a late buy as well. So there's ways that I could definitely sell it. And Trav, you know what? The only way I can look at it positive for the Eagles is saying that all of their easier matchups are on the road. It's like super wild. And all of their hard games are at home. So there Tampa Bay, Kansas City, San Francisco, Chargers, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Kansas City, San Fran, Chargers, New Orleans, all at home. Atlanta, Carolina, Vegas, Denver, Jets, Detroit, all on the road. Start your Eagles on the road.
And it's weird too, because you look at the schedule and they have little pockets, right? So week one is Atlanta, which is interesting because that defense is going to have to hold up because I don't think the Eagles are going to be a high flying team. So if that's a shootout, I don't think that favors the Eagles, even though the Atlanta defense is shit. But then after that Atlanta game, you've got San Francisco, Dallas, Kansas City, which is a tough little 3-game slate, Carolina, then Tampa, like you said, Ty, then Vegas, Detroit, and then Chargers, Broncos, Saints, which is tough. All those divisions games are really tough. The Eagles always shit the bed in division. So I think, like you said, man, it's harder than it looks because I can look at it here and I can say, okay, they only play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams who have over 9 wins projected for them this year. But if you take the context of the teams who don't have 9, we got an 8.8 win projection, an 8.9 win projection. So it's all really close shit. Plus you add in a division that always, like, all the divisions play each other tough. And I think the NFC East is a part of that as well, even if it's maybe a stinkier brand of football from time to time than some other divisions. It's going to be that easy with a quarterback who's coming into his second year trying to figure out a new offense.
Yeah.
Who might, you know, we don't even know if they're going to let him throw the ball. It could be a run heavy team. He could be out of his element if they throw the ball more. Like, it's going to be a very interesting watch to see how they morph that offense around Jalen Hurts.
What do you think, Jacob? Because, you know, that's my, even if we pretend like this is a decent strength schedule, good strength schedule, don't even enter strength schedule in the conversation. The Devontae Smith pick, like, kind of gave us the idea they won't look like the Ravens Super Joe Exotic Smash Mouth offense, but a stronger strength of schedule, the fact that nobody has lost the turnover battle in games more than the Eagles over the last two seasons, like, all that lends to a team who wants to run the ball and, you know, run the damn ball and be safer than sorry on offense under a first-time head coach. So what do you think the Eagles offense looks like?
Yeah, I mean, the best case scenario for me and why I'm still pretty high on the Eagles with the schedule is I don't think they're going to have a choice. Like, I always look at more than I look at opposing defense, I always look at opposing offense. And they play both the Wests, correct? So they're going to play Cardinals. That's going to be good offense. Seahawks, big good offense. Rams, good offense. Niners, good offense. Chiefs, obviously. Chargers, good offense. And, you know, maybe even Denver, at least they have a bunch of weapons and maybe they'll get
even
it on
quarterback. Carolina.
And Carolina. And then you look at the actual division. Dallas is obviously like the dream matchup for any sort of fantasy points. Washington, I think they have a vastly improved offense with Curtis Samuel and Fitzpatrick and De'Ami Brown. And then, you know, even New York, right? I mean, I don't think they're going to have a great offense.
But and maybe there's an element where they play.
They're getting Saquon back. So I think
and maybe the Eagles play down to those teams a little bit. Like maybe those
like
teams
they
meet,
often do.
Yeah, oh, that's what I'm saying. Do. And I'm a Steelers fan, so I appreciate that notion because we see that quite a bit. But it's not only that they play down to that level. Sometimes we'll mimic their level of play, if that makes sense, where, you know, we'll shoot out with the Miami Dolphins 5 years ago in Miami for no reason. And, you know, it's just the way it goes, right? And like Jacksonville, the 5-pick game, you know, we just we'll play as aggressive as the other team plays if we want to. So I think there is definitely a lot of ways that, because I think you're totally right there, Jacob. And I gotta like take this a little bit further. What I'm thinking about it is that, you know, they won't have much of a choice with a 6.5 or whatever their win total is on the particular book that you're using. Yeah. And I think the Cowboys are interesting because they clearly, in my opinion, have the best strength of schedule, the one that is a very good strength of schedule in that NFC East. And I really have a lot of money on Dallas this year to win that division. Oh, and their win total just keeps getting higher and higher. Like, it started where theirs and Washington was right beside each other. And I was kind of betting Washington coming into the offseason, especially after free agency, adding the cornerback and the quarterback. But yeah, Dallas is really rising now, and I'm glad I got in when I did.
That's sharp. And I think I'm on board with all these NFC East teams over consensus. Just because the schedule does matter. Like it's they're facing all of the good offenses. They're facing all the fun teams. When I'm doing my DFS show during the season, and I'm going to be looking at, you know, who is these undercover stack games, and the Eagles are going to be in a lot of them because it's always going to be like, oh, the Eagles are playing the Chargers. What if that game shoots out? And the best thing about Hurts, I don't know what he actually is as NFL quarterback yet. The jury's still out. You know, I think we're totally unknown on if he's a long-term NFL starter. But there's two ways to help fantasy points get scored in a hurry, and it's running and chucking it deep. And that's the thing that he does. He's only in there to do two things. He takes that snap. He's either going to chuck bombs or he's going to take off and run. And so that speeds up the game. Like he's got, you know, a guy in Rager who didn't show a whole ton his rookie year, but he's got wheels. He's that deep threat, and he can focus on just being that deep threat now because he's got Smith to come in and be a proper X receiver. Goddard's a dude that I'm targeting a lot. I think they're going to end up having to throw a lot, and at the very least, when they do throw, he's going to drive the ball down the field. That's going to speed up games. So I just foresee
and no
shootouts with the Eagles because I think – yeah, and no end to the locker room. I don't know. I see these games where they're going to get down 14-0. Hurts is going to start chucking, and they're going to score touchdowns. They're going to score them quick, and it's going to just – these games are going to just start rolling, and you're going to see Eagles in a lot of DFS lineups this year.
And as a Colts fan, do you have faith in Nick Sirianni and, like, these minds being able to draw it up and everything for Hurts?
I think Nick Sirianni – I don't know what to think about Nick Sirianni, to be honest with you. Like, Frank Reich is the play caller in Indy.
Yeah, that's true.
So – I don't know what to tell you in terms of Sirianni's influence. It's unknown. Like I think it was such a strange hire, in my opinion, to take a guy and stick him with a
nobody wanted that
developing
job.
Quarterback who has zero play calling experience. I mean, now he's out here talking about rock, paper, scissors. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'll tell you what, I'm not too concerned about the Colts missing out on Nick Sirianni. I think we're gonna be just fine.
I think it's better. Exactly. It's better that he was learning play calling from Frank Reich than if he was learning from Doug Peterson, though. That's for
sure. That's for sure. Yeah. That's facts.
I miss Frankie a lot, buddy. Yeah. I just hope it's creative, man. I just hope it's like creative and new. Yeah. And maybe the he more surprises they can disguise, us. You know what better. I mean? I'm just being optimistic. I'm at the point where I've washed all the Wentz drama away, all the bullshit. Like I still can't stand Howie right now. We're kind of fighting, but it's kind of a thing that we do from time to time. But I'm ready to come into the season with optimism, right? Just because it's not like I'm going to change the team that I'm a fucking fan of. Cause you just don't do that.
So, you do that if you're a Texans fan, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that if you're a Texans fan for sure. For sure. What do we think, boys? We just cleared two bills.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's still with us, I mean, first of all, you know, get a life. But second of all, thank you.
Craig is definitely here.
Coach Craig. Yeah, Coach Craig, by the way, I feel bad
replying
to your comments. But the fact you're with us here 2 hours later, you are a real one, man. I appreciate the hell out of that, Coach Craig. And anyone else who's listening to this later on your strolls or on your runs or whatever it is that you do, shout out to you guys. You guys are the real ones. 2 hours, man.
We love it. We're big fans of getting tons of good information out. Yeah, so we got a bunch of other teams here, Ty. I'm just going to run through your list of some of the other good teams, and maybe we can tweet some stuff out from the pod account. I do want to start drawing some attention to the podcast specific account at TNFF Pod. So we'll tweet some stuff out and figure out a way to get some of this info out too, even though we ran a little long on this pod, which is no surprise to anybody who's listened to us before. Some of these other teams, Ty, were Tennessee has a good schedule. Mm-hmm. Cleveland, Jacksonville, Minnesota have good first halves, bad second halves. Seattle has one of the first opening 4 weeks, really, really good final 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Rams, Dolphins, definitely a tale of first half versus second half. Pittsburgh's is not looking very good, Ty. But that's
good because I have bets against Pittsburgh, so that's good. I have multiple bets going against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I actually got in. I hate to say this on air, but I got in on Pittsburgh on the under as well at a higher price.
That's like a smart move.
But I just think they're clearly the third best team in their division. Like, it's hard to argue that. I would argue that they're the best defense in the division, but I think it's going to be hard for the Steelers. But I would argue that it is anyone's game out of those three. I think it is pretty clear that they are the third best.
You don't even have the best rapist quarterback in the NFL anymore.
No, totally. Yeah.
I think that sentiment, Ty, is saying something just for any fantasy gamers out there to make sure you don't get locked in to anything, because I can tell anybody who knows him that if you cut Ty, his blood is a terrible towel.
But I'm also the most
totally. And that's what I'm saying is like people need to be like that. Like sometimes I've been accused of it and probably been guilty of homerism.
You draft
before.
A lot of Eagles, man.
But what I'm saying is that it's a good play by you to realize and utilize that in your analysis.
And I just
want
to say
people might not do that.
You now are under the spotlight, my friend, because the Eagles have always been a very good team to tie to for fantasy. Going back to Andy Reid, you know what I mean? We've always wanted Eagles more or less. Kevin Kolb, like, give me anyone on the Eagles. But
Kevin Kolb.
I
loved him for a minute.
I think I started him in a big game and he did well for me once, just because it's the Eagles. But what I'm saying, Trav, is with this new era, it might be time to kind of take a step back and maybe see if you do want to still be attached to Eagles fantasy going forward, because I have really been kind of hands off of.
I want to be attached to the Eagles personally.
Yeah.
Jacob is elbow deep in the birds.
Yeah. I do. I want to be attached to them in best ball, especially because I think Rieger's a great value. I think Smith is a great value, and Hurts. I mean, he's gonna start the year. Like, it's just him and Joe Flacco. They have three first round picks next year. So all this year's four. If I'm an Eagles fan, the entire point of this year should be figuring out if Jalen Hurts is your quarterback in the future or not. And you should give him every opportunity to do so. And you know, we'll see if he's the guy. And I don't know if he's gonna be the guy, but I do know it'll be fantasy friendly. I'll tell you one really funny anecdote that Trav probably remembers this game. But I have generally not wanted to be attached to the Eagles because I'm still spiteful. The first year I was playing fantasy was 2014. And I had – my quarterbacks originally were Nick Foles and Andrew Luck. And Nick Foles, that was the year he went down.
Yeah.
So after that, Tannehill was my QB3 back when he was with the Dolphins. And mm-hmm. I ended up picking up Sanchez. And so Sanchez was actually pretty good for a hot minute there.
Yeah.
And
he had a couple of 300s.
He had a couple of nice little games. I remember when he had that Monday Night Football game. He's parading around town. He's eating cheesesteaks. You know, it was good vibes all around. And so I go in, and I'm in the quarterfinal, and I was the 2 seed, and I'm playing someone's dog team. And I can't remember exactly how many points, but I needed not a whole lot of points going into Sunday Night Football. And I was starting Sanchez, and I was starting McCoy. So it was Sunday Night Football against the Cowboys, and I'm starting Sanchez and McCoy. And I'm thinking, I'm absolutely golden, because all I need to do is score points on the Cowboys. Cowboys defense is trash. It's always been trash. So how hard is it going to be? And I can't remember how many touchdowns they scored. But what I do remember is that Chris fucking Polk had 2 carries for 2 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Oh,
and
then
And I lost by 2 points in the quarterfinals, even though I had the quarterback and the running back. And I'm like, the winner, you score the touchdown. I went, it's fucking Chris Polk. And then it's Chris Polk again. And so
Philadelphia Eagles.
Because Chris Eagles Polk legend. Ruined my fucking life. Yeah. 2 carries for 2 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Wow. In the last 5 minutes, we have talked about both Eagles legend Chris Polk as well as Arizona Cardinals legend Kevin Kolb. So this is a great way to polish off the pod, fellas. I do remember that. And I think Sanchez scored like a single digits fantasy points.
Yeah, he was in the singles for sure.
It was dirt McGirt, buddy. So I felt your pain for sure. All right, guys. So I'm ready to fly out of here. Jacob, really, really, really appreciate you coming on, dude. It was a blast. It's always a testament when our guests are totally down to ride for a couple hours with us. We really appreciate it. That's, you know, we like to hit the thorough approach on our fantasy analysis and what we give to our listeners. And I think you nailed that tonight, buddy. So thanks again for coming on. Really, really appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Definitely one of the more thoughtful guys we've had on for sure. It was really fun and appreciate you rolling with us when we had very little structure to our show.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine by me. If you had a structure, I'll break the structure. I'm like, mm-hmm. Wentz, you know, you have a play call, I'll scramble around.
make sure you let the people know where they can find you and what you're working on. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I sure will. You can find me FF_RTDB. Most recent work, you can find my Bateman piece up on playerprofiler.com. You can find my rookie draft guide. If your league has not yet drafted, you can find my rookie draft cheat sheet up on fantasyintervention.com, along with the rest of my work is on, you know, one of those two sites. So make sure to check that out. We'll have more stuff coming throughout the summer. I'll have a lot more stuff on this upcoming rookie class. I'm working on a fun little article right now where I'm taking the Dynasty Dominator trade app, and I'm trying to build the best possible starting lineup for a 2023 second round pick. So I basically just we're benching on a budget is what I'm calling it, and I'm gonna go through the best little garbagey players you can chuck on your lineup. You should be checking at the end of your bench and your taxi squad. So I'm having fun. I feel at home with the shittiest players in the NFL because that's all I could ever aspire to be. So I'll be right in my element on that one.
No, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. So, yeah. Just lastly, a big shout out to our sponsors, Monkey Knife Fight, as well as Trophy Smack, and of course the Fantasy Points Media Group. So thankful to be a part of that. Everybody, check out all the brands involved there. Ty, you got any parting shots for the people, my man?
No, I'm good. I gotta pee.
Sounds good, man. Well,
sounds like a good plan.
Before Ty has an accident, I want to say thanks to everybody who stuck around. Thanks to Jacob, for myself, for Tyrell McLaughlin. We will see you guys next week. Peace.